Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 12th of August. Those of you who live in Milwaukee will know that this has been a particularly violent week in the city of Milwaukee with a number of shootings and fatalities. And I'm sure that that is particularly troublesome to both of our guests. Milwaukee's Safe and Sound program is what we talk about this hour. It was started in 1998, quite a while ago, to reduce crime, particularly violent crime. It operates in 21 City of Milwaukee neighborhoods. They are high crime, low income areas of the city, and they account for the majority of violent felony offenses. They have a three-part program, and we're going to be talking about the positive alternatives for young people, the door-to-door neighborhood organizing by community partners, and also the very tough law enforcement component of this program as well. And both of our guests, I'm sure, will be able to respond to the recent wave of violence, why there has been a great deal of it, and what the solutions are. They're difficult questions. Barbara Notestein is with us. Barbara is Executive Director of Safe and Sound, and she was a longtime state of Wisconsin legislator. She has worked as director of the Hunger Task Force as well. She has served as executive director of Safe and Sound since 2002, I think. Right, Barbara?
That's right, Kathleen.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us in our Milwaukee studios, Taliba Martine Hooper, who is community partner organizer with Safe and Sound. Taliba, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
With churches and residents and all kinds of people in this program.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, let's look at, before we talk about the history of the program, what's been going on this summer in the communities. I know the police chief has talked about it. The mayor has talked about it. The legislators in Madison, some of them have talked about it. Is there any reason, when you look at this from a historical perspective, why we're seeing, and maybe we're not, maybe there were other summers that were as violent, these kinds of shootings taking place and fatalities? Barbara?
It is a complex situation. There's no question about it, and therefore there aren't any real easy answers. We're seeing a number of things. First of all, there's gun shootings involving gangs, violent drug gangs are certainly very active, and so we're seeing that kind of activity. But we're also seeing an upsurge, or it feels like an upsurge, of disputes between individuals that really are or feel as if they're fairly small kinds of things. And instead of them becoming a fist fight, or maybe in the old days something that involved a knife, instead someone will take out a gun and shoot the other person. And that does speak to the accessibility of guns in our culture.
Mm-hmm. Taliba, you want to respond to that as well?
Like Barbara said, it's just, it could stem from domestic abuse. It could be kids wanting to get guns because they want to feel safe, and then that could actually, you know, cause conflict, cause problems.
Right. I think the police chief was talking about, and I thought this was an interesting thing for him to say, the culture of retaliatory violence is aided and abetted by the fact that it's more dangerous to see your enemy without your gun than with it. That was an interesting statement, wasn't it? Can you talk about retaliatory violence? Is that a lot of what we're seeing now?
It is some of what we're seeing. Certainly there is a notion that if someone disses you, if they speak ill of you, if they look at your boyfriend or the girlfriend in the wrong way, if they shoot your relative, then what you are supposed to do is go back and shoot them. And so we do see a certain amount of that in Milwaukee and across the country.
Let's talk about the organization Safe and Sound. You've been around since 1998, which is a long time. Taliba, have you been able to notice a difference in the 21 neighborhoods that you've been targeting? Do you think that they are safer?
I would say that people are coming together more. They're part of block clubs. They're talking to the residents. Because the most important thing is that residents can change their block. Because you basically know who live on your block, the type of activity that's happening on the block. And I think that a lot of times people are afraid to get involved. And I remember one woman was telling me that, this lady, her grandson was selling drugs, and she was saying, well, he's not that bad. But I was telling her that he's selling drugs, that's bad. And he may not be on a corner, but he's selling drugs. What if something happens, someone come to the house, buy some drugs, a drug deal go bad, then you wind up shooting up folks, maybe two or three kids get murdered because of that. So people have to take charge of the neighborhood. I always say tough love. You have to start looking out for your neighbors. You have to start calling the police. You have to start getting involved because activity happens in blocks when people don't get involved. If there's a family and they're fighting or there's some kids doing some negative activity, you have to get involved. Sometimes people feel that, well, they're not bothering me. I don't really care. But you have to care because once people start shooting, it could be you, it could be your child, it could be anyone, you know?
So it's kind of a catch-22. How do you get people involved when the reason they may not be involved is because they're afraid to go outside because there's violent activity going on?
It takes time. And one of the things that we've been successful at is, and we've done this in the past, the law enforcement will go into a neighborhood, they will arrest some major drug trafficking people who are very violent, and we will begin, and Taliba is one of our fine organizers, they walk door-to-door in neighborhoods, they hold what we call front porch conversations with residents. They build a relationship with people, create trust, and then they start talking to those residents about, well, what if we could organize a block watch, and what if we could start meeting together and identifying the issues in this neighborhood and then build connections with the police department, the district attorney's community prosecution unit, the city department of neighborhood services to deal with blighted properties, and together they can fashion a strategy for addressing the problems that occur there. And they can slowly over a period of time create an atmosphere where it's very clear that crime, drug dealing, other kinds of nefarious activity is not welcome. And the chief will talk about rebuilding the social fabric in neighborhoods, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're getting residents engaged in processes that make the neighborhood strong enough to drive that crime out.
Right. And you're also finding places for young people, and this is important, to feel safe, right, so that they won't come home after school where they're at a time period of day when there is a lot, there can be violence, a place where they can feel that there's an alternative to a place that may not be very safe for them. I think that's an important component of what you do.
We have after-school safe places for young people ages 10 to 19, and yes, part of it is having them be safe. We've found, and research shows, that the young people who have been victims of crime tend to become the perpetrators of new crimes. But what we're also doing at our after-school programs is engaging youth in projects to show them that they can become young leaders. They can become change makers. They're taking responsibility for their neighborhoods and actually transform vacant lots, do community organizing door-to-door, work with older adults to build relationships between young people and older adults. So there's a lot of things that young people can do. And so it's, yes, we want to keep them busy and engaged, but we want to teach them that they can make change as well.
Right, right. That's quite an important thing. I mean, it's hard to imagine how it's done, but to transform somebody's life, and I'm sure that both of you have seen that, is an amazing thing to be able to do, but I would think really, really hard, isn't it?
You know, Rocherfield Care, that's a very successful block club because they've gotten, I would say, at least 70% of the residents involved in the block club. I believe that once residents come together, then they feel they're powerful because the most important thing is that communities need to understand that they do have a voice. And once people come together, they can really change the neighborhood. Because I believe that when you just sit around and peep out the window and say, well, they're breaking into Mrs. Smith's car, or those kids are always fighting, always arguing, all you do is sit back and watch, then, you know, you have to get involved. Because you'd be surprised how many times kids, they would stop and say, okay. Because some kids, they want to be told what to do. You know, not all the kids are running wild, but residents have to believe that they have a voice. And once people start coming together and saying enough is enough, they can change, you know, they can change the block. I know it's scary, but, you know, we have to work along with law enforcement, and the only way to do that is to get involved.
Right.
People are saying don't snitch. I mean, that's, to me, that's kind of crazy, because if you're seeing someone committing a crime, you may not be a victim today, but you may be a victim tomorrow. So you have to get involved. You have to say, this is what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Don't snitch. It's interesting that you said that. Is that sort of an unspoken thing that happens in certain neighborhoods among the young people?
Yeah,
don't snitch?
That's very common. Don't snitch. So if someone's breaking into someone's house or somebody sees somebody get shot, it's like, oh, don't tell. But the crazy part about it is that we are seeing so many young kids that are murdered out here. You know, a lot of times maybe it could have been prevented by getting involved, maybe talking to somebody, reporting something. You know, you just can't sit in your house, peeping out the window, gossiping to your neighbor.
Right.
Oh, I saw this and I saw that. You got to take a chance. That's the thing. You've got to take a chance. Don't be afraid. You got to take a chance because we're losing a whole generation out here, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the number of kids that are murdered, and the first thing people say, if we need peace in our neighborhood, my question, where are all those families after this person dies? Why aren't they out and getting involved? Because we need those voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Barbara, you were going to say something.
Well, one of the things that Taliba and her counterparts are very good at is talking with residents and encouraging them to be in conversations with the police. Having conversations with the police is not necessarily something that comes naturally to any of us. And so we work with them to build the relationships between residents and neighborhoods and mostly the community liaison officers in the police district around the city. And they sit down and they talk with each other and they come to understandings with each other. And people learn that they can trust the police and can sit down and talk with them. The other resource we have is something called a community prosecution unit. The district attorney in Milwaukee has been a leader in this country in taking some of his prosecuting attorneys and placing them out into the police district stations. And then there is a team of resources that are built around that. Some police officers specific to the project, the assistant DA, people like Mateen, Taliba Mateen, we call her Mateen.
Okay.
who are organizers. We have community prosecution coordinators who work with this team, advocates from Sojourner Peace, people from the City Department of Neighborhood Services who specialize in dealing with blighted properties. And that team of people, in response to concerns that residents have and concerns that our staff bring to them, work through a process of dealing with vacant properties, properties where there is drug dealing, prostitution, other kinds of activities that destabilize a neighborhood, and respond to these concerns that residents have and help to turn those properties around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another asset and another resource that residents can learn to use and we can bring to them.
In a way, you think about when you mention drug dealing and prostitution, I'm thinking money, too, and I'm thinking jobs and the nature of all of this, which is really pretty huge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously if you have a fairly good-paying job, maybe drug dealing might be more, you may make a little bit more for a little period of time, but it's dangerous work. So you're also looking at community development, aren't you, and trying to find other things for people to do rather than deal drugs or be involved in prostitution.
You know, there is a need for jobs. We all know it's a need for jobs for a lot of these guys who are felons because a lot of times they
right.
can't find jobs and they go back to what they know, which is dealing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So jobs would make a big difference in the community, a big difference. Now you're going to talk about where the money coming from. I don't know, but I know that there is a need for jobs. A lot of the guys I meet on the street, they're like, well, I'm a felon. You know, I'm a three-time felon. I can't find employment. I don't know what to say to those guys. I don't have any way to get them jobs, but if there were a program, you know, where the guys could go and could get decent jobs, you know, like they got the trade, that's a good field to go into. So it says, I believe that if there were more jobs on the street, there wouldn't be a need for drug dealing. Not saying it's going to go away, but
right.
maybe that would eliminate maybe a good portion of those guys to get good paying jobs for themselves and their families.
Right.
It's complicated because in order to have businesses and employers in the city, we need to have safe neighborhoods. And business people need to understand that the work of Safe and Sound and others that care about creating safe neighborhoods is vital to having businesses, having employees want to work at those businesses,
sure.
having customers come to those places of business. So having safety and safe neighborhoods is something that is very important to all of us, including businesses. But having jobs is something that is complicated.
Right.
And the city needs to work at it.
What about something maybe as simple as having a strong police presence? Is that important? Does that make just seeing police on bicycles or walking the streets, does it make crime less likely?
I think that having police officers who walk a beat, officers who are out on bicycles, the likelihood then that those officers, well, two things happen. One is that there's a greater opportunity for those officers to meet and build relationships with the positive members of a community. So there's that going on. And then there's also the opportunity for officers to see more easily what's happening in a neighborhood. That going by in a patrol car, I think, is very valuable, but I think you see more when you're sure. out on the street. So I do think that it does have a negative impact on people who would commit crimes. I don't know if Mateen has any thoughts.
Well, that's good, but once again, you know, having a safe neighborhood, that's very important. But once again, there is a need for jobs. So having the police present, that would be good. But the bottom line is just that, you know, the police go home and the kids still need jobs.
Yeah. When people have, it's always amazing to me the perceptions people have of the city of Milwaukee. I've lived here for a long, long time and I love the city. But there is a perception that it's this place that's filled with violence and this is happening all the time, which is also not very good for the city. Indications are, from what I've read, that there are a group of people who are creating a lot of these problems, that there are gang members that maybe aren't huge in numbers, but we tend to think everything is bad. All of these streets are not safe. All the people who live on them are prone to violence, et cetera, et cetera. Are you able in your work to target the number of people who are involved in this kind of horrendous activity that makes everybody feel unsafe?
Well, I think some of that has to be handled by the police department. Yeah. We are not law enforcement mm-hmm. personnel. It's Safe and Sound. We're not armed. We're out on the street, you know, as outreach workers. But the chief has talked about the fact that they've identified, I believe the number was about 175
right.
people who are bad actors, and they watch them and track them and are able to sort of monitor them and make sure that they aren't engaging in criminal activity. But your observation about the rest of the city, that there are thousands and thousands of wonderful Milwaukeeans mm-hmm. who are deeply involved in their neighborhoods. They take good care of their properties. They are building community gardens. I mean, mm-hmm. something that Mateen does a lot of mm-hmm. is work with residents on beautification projects.
Nice. Very
they
nice.
Are deeply involved in projects to change their neighborhoods. And I would invite people to get in touch with us at Safe and Sound and say to
okay.
us, take us out to some of the neighborhoods where positive things are going on, because there are wonderful things and great, very positive, constructive people working hard to change their neighborhoods.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are speaking this hour with the executive director, Barbara Notestein, of Safe and Sound. A program started a number of years ago to reduce crime, particularly violent crime. It's now operating in 21 City of Milwaukee neighborhoods. Taliba Mateen Hooper is community partner organizer for Safe and Sound. Our phone lines are going crazy here, so we'll have you be a part of the conversation in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later this afternoon, Rob Ferret and Cynthia Schuster hear about Detroit's contribution to the world of rock music. It did not end with Motown. Phone calls now, 800-486-8655. Ray in Milwaukee is our first caller. Oh, Ray, hello. Oh, that's a terrible. I don't know what happened to Ray, but he's not there. So let's go to Paul in Milwaukee. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
I wanted to comment on your speakers talking about police presence on bicycles, even walking the beat.
Uh-huh.
I totally agree with that. It's something that I've been pushing for in our neighborhood for a long time. I've had limited response with it, but we've been trying to clean up our neighborhood one house at a time, and I just think that's a great way to go for the police to be where the action is, not driving by.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for your thoughts. Taliba, I wanted to ask you more about this process of going door-to-door and getting people involved. That's a pretty big thing to do, to knock on somebody's door and ask them to start observing and working with other people in the neighborhood. What do you do when you knock on the door and somebody answers?
I basically
Can you hear okay?
Can I take this off?
Yeah, you can take it off.
I basically just, you know, introduce myself, tell them what agency I'm from, and give them resource information. Ask them how is it going in the neighborhood. And they may tell me, well, there's some activity. I have no concern. It just depends. And then once I feel the person out and find out that they are concerned, then I say, hey, have you thought about starting a block watch? Or have you thought about maybe doing a neighborhood cleanup? Or maybe having a block party, or maybe doing an automatic walk with your auto person to kind of get a good look at the neighborhood close up.
Mm-hmm. And how many times are you successful? How many times do people say, yeah, I have thought of that. I want to join forces.
Well, a lot of times people may say they want to do things, but they don't. Well, it just depends. So far, I have like 4 good block clubs. And the people, they know one another on their block. They speak. They have events together. They do a number of things. And they develop friendships.
Yes.
That's the most important thing, because if you're able to get to know your neighbor, but then to become a friend, that's very important. And also for a while there, we had something called the welcome wagon. You move on to a block, the block representative would come in your house, give you resource information about the different things that are happening in the neighborhood. You get a couple phone numbers, because a lot of times when you move on to a block, you may need to talk to somebody about whatever. And it's good to know that there's somebody on the block who came to your house, gave you resource information, let you know about the safe places, the grocery stores, the churches, whatever you need.
I remember those from years and years ago when I was a kid, and that was a long time ago, the welcome wagon.
Yes,
I
that's
always
what
thought
it's
it was
called.
A great thing.
Yes.
Mateen does it a little bit differently, though, if I can say this, Mateen. They've often done it in the company of a police officer. So the police officer and a non-officer will come to the door and welcome people to the neighborhood, but it very quickly sends a message to anyone who might want to engage in any negative activity that perhaps this isn't the place to do it. So it has a little extra message.
It sure
with
does. It sure does. Thanks, Paul, very much for the call. Put your headphones back on. We're going to another phone call. And Rod is in Eau Claire next. Oh, hi, Rod.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question. Wouldn't it be the first thing to do, I think, wouldn't it be to advocate to end the war on drugs? Because it's been a war on the poor. And I think if we ended that war on drugs, those severe punishments for nonviolent crimes, I think many things will get better, and lives wouldn't be ruined for such nonviolent things, and for such nonviolent things as, you know, using drugs or some certain drugs, and treat these people, many people, as people who are sick, not criminals. And I think that would help save, I mean, many lives and improve the areas. So I want to get your thoughts on that.
Barbara.
I want to say a few things about that. One is that the Attorney General, I think, just today or yesterday has come out with some statements about the over-incarceration of people in this country, particularly African-American males and Hispanics. And one of the things he's talking about is diminishing the prison sentences for what are really nonviolent crimes, including drugs, so that there is that to consider. I have not taken a position one way or the other on legalization of drugs, but what I do see is that we don't want to have people using drugs when they drive, when they're operating machinery, when they're going to work, when they're going to school. We operate a drug-free communities coalition on the west side of Milwaukee and have done some research on what is going on with young people there. And what we're seeing is the levels of truancy and school non-performance are very, very high, and it correlates significantly with the use of marijuana by young people. So whether or not we should be legalizing drugs, I don't necessarily think so, but there are repercussions from all of that that we need to take into very serious consideration. So it's a complicated issue, and I'm watching what's happening in some other states and other communities where they have engaged in legalization, and we'll see what happens there.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of something that's in progress, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. What do you suspect, both of you, because drug-related crime is large in the areas that we're looking at, and it can go to the extent of people killing each other over this kind of issue. Can you give us some sense, Taliba, of why people sell drugs? Is it an economic reason, or people feeding a habit that they have, or do you know?
It's economics. Because you have so many, like I said, once again, Everybody wants a job. And for the people that are selling drugs, it's easy money because people coming from the suburbs into the cities to buy drugs. So it's easy for money for a lot of people. And you have those who go to jail. They may be on one corner. Then when they go to jail, they come back. They want that same corner. And because of that, sometimes that could turn into a killing situation too. Yeah. But drugs in America is big money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's big money.
I guess it is big money, isn't it?
And, you know, you say supply and demand, because there's people coming from the suburbs into Milwaukee to buy drugs, you know.
Right.
So it's a very big business. I mean, it's big business now, you know.
Yeah. All right, let's go to, by the way, our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we do have a couple lines open for you right now. Ray is here now, I believe. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Let's keep talking about this drug trade. Where in the United States is an average kid between 16 and 18 going to get a job that might earn him $500 to $1,000 cash a day? If we don't stop this ridiculous prohibition on drugs while we're selling cigarettes and alcohol at every turn, especially here in Milwaukee, where the drunks can't seem to drive on the right side of the road, we have to have a fair and reasonable look at this prohibition on drugs, because it's capitalism at its finest. But what I really wanted to talk about was the police and the judicial system in Milwaukee. The Milwaukee police regularly kill people of color, get away with it. They do illegal cavity searches of people of color. They get away with it. They even brought Dahmer's last victim back to Dahmer so Dahmer could kill that person.
All right, let's talk about police-community relations. I don't think that it's fair to say that the police routinely kill African Americans. There have been some cases, of course, that have been much noted and problematic, but he brings up a point. He got me thinking about whether or not, when you say the police come with somebody who's asking to form a block watch or to give an added oomph to somebody who might be involved in criminal activities, are the relations between police and the communities that you've targeted harmonious?
It varies, and I would say that it's improving. Certainly, Milwaukee has a very, very long history of difficult relationships between the police department and residents, mm-hmm. and there are people of color who have had significant experiences with mistreatment. I do think that this chief and Nan Haggerty, his predecessor, and perhaps others, have worked very hard at trying to improve those relationships. But there is no question that this is an ongoing struggle. It's something that we all need to keep working on, and we are trying to build better relationships between police and residents. But it takes time, and it's not an easy issue to confront. Now, Taliba, who is an African-American woman, may have a...
What do you think?
Yeah.
It's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress. That's all I can say at this point. It's because we have block watch, meaning we have different liaison officers that come and they talk with the residents, and some of the residents, they have good relationships with them. But once again, it's a work in progress. Relationships mm-hmm. between law enforcement and the community, so... Like I said, it's a work in progress, and on both ends, you know, people are trying to work with it.
Yeah. Thanks, Ray, very much for your call. Jean in Madison, hi.
Hi. My consideration for both...
Jean, why don't you turn the... Jean...
...is communication. These kids from poverty pockets are coming to school without a vocabulary that helps them succeed. When somebody can't talk, the action is then with acts, like hitting another child to get the truck instead of, may I please see your truck? That's all I have to say. Thank
all right,
you.
Thanks very much. What happens in these safe places? I know these are more than just here's a safe place for you to be. When you talk about developing leadership and communication skills, it sounds like it's a fairly involved program, Barbara.
It is. We fund, this year it's 19 after-school programs for children who are ages 10 to 19, and the idea is to engage them in positive activities, prevent them from getting involved with alcohol, drugs, criminal activity, gangs. And so there is a lot of programming designed to deal with that. One of the other things that we've been involved with, too, is restorative justice. And restorative justice and peacemaking circles have also been operating to some extent in the Milwaukee Public Schools. There's an assistant district attorney named Paul Dudinsky who is working in the schools on utilizing peacemaking circles. And part of the idea here is that we need to find different ways for people to talk and communicate with each other. And through the restorative justice process or peacemaking circles, we teach people that they do have the opportunity to talk with each other about what their concerns are. They can say what's on their mind. They can express the concerns that they have. And they can come to understand each better through this kind of a process. The caller is I don't know whether she's saying this, but I inferred that basically what she was saying was that we need to get people of all ages to talk to each other and with each other in different ways and find the space and the calmness to be able to talk about what's going on so that when there's a dispute about shoes or you're looking at my boyfriend and you shouldn't be looking at him or whatever the triggers can be for anger and disputes, that we need to help people find different ways of solving those kinds of problems. And I think we're starting some of that in our schools and we're starting some of it in our safe places. I've been talking to people about whether or not we could take restorative justice techniques out into our neighborhoods and get people to talk to each other that way, and it's something I'd like to explore.
It is. When you said that, though, it's fairly incredible to think that there would be violence because somebody's looking at somebody's boyfriend in a way that that person didn't like. And we're talking about some fairly basic human understanding here that it's kind of frightening that that we need to teach people that.
I think that people in our community and cities across the country live in environments of tremendous stress. There may be no job.
Right.
There may be no decent source of income. There isn't adequate access to health care. The schools that they go to are sometimes good, but sometimes not able to respond to the needs that young people have. Many of our young people are witnessing violence all the time. We've done focus groups where we've asked children whether or not they've ever had a gun pointed at them, and the answer in many cases is yes. So that we're having people in life with very, very complicated and stressful situations. And so we might not like them reacting a certain way about a pair of shoes or a boyfriend or a theft of something, but these are the circumstances that people are dealing with, and we have to look at them where they are and address the real concerns that people have and present.
So, Taliba, how hard is it to change that?
Oh, well, everything starts at home. And if you don't get the basic things you need, you would go outside of your home and get it, like looking for love in all the wrong places, like Barbara was saying, you know, shooting over someone because they're with someone's boyfriend. It's just everything starts at home. And I think that we need to deal with the family, because the kids, they did not come here with all this anger, with all this dysfunctional. So we need to focus on the families. Why are things happening where that they are? No.
And what about the guns? How do we focus on the guns? Do we need to focus on the guns?
The question is, where are the guns coming from? They wind up in a central city, but where are they coming from? That's the question. And some kids say it's easy. They can just go out there and spend $25 to get a gun, because they always say, I know where to get a gun. I know who I can get a gun from. It shouldn't be that easy. But the question is, where are they coming from before they hit the central city? That's the question.
Barbara, what about the guns?
Guns are a very major problem. Safe and Sound hasn't taken a political position on gun control, but I think the mayor is and the police chief are absolutely right when they talk about the fact that we need to take steps to keep the guns keep the guns out of the hands of criminals, take them away from people who are violent. We do need to take steps in this community, in this state, to address that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gene, thanks very much for the call. Jake in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I grew up out in Waukesha County. I live in Milwaukee now in the Sherman Park area. And I know there's a lot of personal things we can do as the city ourselves, because I love the city and want to make it a good place to live. And we have a neighborhood, a neighborhood organization. That's great. But I think one of the biggest problems to Milwaukee is the suburbs that ring around it and hyper-segregate the city. They're against absolutely everything, even transportation. They have done everything in their political power to keep Milwaukee down. Just in fact, I mean, you can even check, like, Robin Voss's and Scott Walker's reaction to what's been happening, and it's kind of like, who cares? Less Democrats, probably, in their minds, because they're terrible human beings. But anyways, and in order, I think, for Milwaukee to do better, we need strong people in state government to release and you know, get rid of some of the power of people who, frankly, hate Milwaukee and the people who live there. They're basically lots of bigots around Milwaukee. I guess that's all I have to say.
Wait, before
it just makes me sad.
Before you go, Jake, tell me what you're doing in your neighborhood to make it safer. You said you had some kind of group? You have a watch group?
Well, yeah, I'm part of the Norwood Neighborhood Association. And we, you know, just neighbors, you know, we do some things, but basically we just watch out for each other and call the police and just make sure everything's okay. And, So, you know, we had community policing last year and it was great, but of course the state government cut it and we had cops for 2 months that would do a beat around the neighborhood. And, you know, you can check on spot crime how, you know, we live in a nice little triangle area and the crime has stayed relatively low, and I think it's because we're very vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's from 60th Keith Roosevelt, that little triangle right there. And,
yeah, I know exactly where it is.
I think if more neighborhoods had that, I think there would be a lot less crime in the city just for taking personal responsibility on that end.
Mm. Well, that's essentially what Safe and Sound has been doing for a number of years, right? You must be able to see some of the same kinds of results as what Jake was talking about. What part of his mini comments do you want to respond to? Because he also talked about bigotry and racism and segregation and the role this plays in some of the issues we're talking about.
Well, I think two things. One is that he lives in a neighborhood, Sherman Park, where they have built a very strong neighborhood organization. And it is through those kinds of organizations, whether it be Black Watches or larger associations that bring together a group of Black Watches, where residents can take action to make change. So I commend him and Sherman Park and others who have taken a leadership role and taken action to change their neighborhoods. But I would also say that we do need regional approaches to problems in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin, that all of us, whether it's Milwaukee County or the surrounding counties, do need to work together to make changes, whether it's to promote Milwaukee as a center for water research and bringing businesses here that can provide jobs to people or funding for regional assets. We do need to look together at a region and not you know, burden one particular area or another with a large portion of the responsibilities and issues. We are all in this together, and we need to solve it together.
Thanks, Jake, very much for the call. Roosevelt has an email for us. Are you getting help from people who own property in these low-income areas, landlords?
Oh, yeah, we're getting help from the residents who are homeowners. You'd be surprised the number of homeowners that are actually living in the city. They keep their property up. They engage the people in the neighborhood, the renters. I don't really – well, the renters, a lot of renters are like homeowners. They live on a block, and they see other people keeping their property up who are homeowners, and they get with the program too. So it's very important that people don't put the renters down because people are always saying the renters, this and the renters are that. But you have people who understand, I live in this house. I may not own it, but I will cut the grass, and I will shovel the snow, and I will get involved with block clubs, and I will report activity on the block. Because people who change communities, they actually inspire other people who may be renters or who may be landlords or who may be whomever. But it's almost like a, you know, like a ball rolling, you know, keeps on, and everybody wants to get involved. Like Brocherfield Cares, those are residents who are involved, and they involve other people in the neighborhood too. And that makes a big difference because once people see things change and they want to get involved, there's a community garden on 11th and Burlite, and one of the residents had said, they heard this little girl say, oh, it's looking pretty around here.
Aww.
So kids know what a nice neighborhood look like, you know, and that makes a big difference because they come, it's looking pretty around here. A little girl, and she knows what a nice neighborhood is looking like, so That makes me feel good because people understand, you know, we're going to continue on and make this a wonderful place to live. Brochefield Cares.
More phone calls in just one moment. We're talking about the Safe and Sound program this hour of the program. It's been around since 1998, and it has many different parts to it. And I think our conversation is particularly important because so much attention has been placed on the number of violent incidents in the city of Milwaukee the last week and this summer as well. So how do we make our neighborhood safer is the question of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Barbara Notestein is executive director of Safe and Sound. She's also a longtime Wisconsin state legislator, and she served as director of the Hunger Task Force for a number of years as well. Taliba Mateen Hooper, community partner organizer for Safe and Sound, is also with us. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferrin and Cynthia Schuster asked the question, do we still need car dealerships in the United States? That's on Central Time. Let's go back to phone calls. Deborah in Brown Deer is next. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. First, I'd like to give a shout-out to our neighbors, the Griffins, who just handed out their memo personally to us, our Triangle Neighborhood Picnic. And so I live in Brown Deer, but I grew up in the Upper Peninsula, and I had what I consider an exquisite childhood. Like, it was like a storybook, and my dad loved nature. He wasn't a huggy, cuddly person, but his gift to me was nature. And so as a result, I love nature, and I think if kids are exposed to it, and I love tree houses, too, so I thought, well, let's build a tree house out and on a piece of property an hour from Milwaukee and take these kids, or wherever you are, take these kids when they're little children, in kindergarten, first grade, bring them up to the wilderness, and they would love a tree house. I mean, I'm talking not just your little shack tree house, but there's a great book, the Tree House book, but they would be so hooked on it. I just think it would turn kids into environmentalists, and it would be an anti-crime effort all in one.
All right, Taliba.
Yeah, she's right. I love that. I remember a lifetime ago, I had gone up to Black Forest, Wisconsin for Job Corps, and I met this young man from Chicago. I said, how do you like it up here? He said, this is the only place I've been where I can be myself, because in the cities there's always sirens and shooting and stuff, and I like that idea. I believe that if you do give kids opportunity to get out of Milwaukee, because so many kids are traumatized, you know, and to be out in nature for about a couple of days, that would be fantastic. That's mm-hmm. a wonderful idea. Because a lot of times when you're in a city, you don't have time to breathe because you're constantly watching your back. Look at the kids on the bus stop when school starts. Notice that when cars go past, how everybody's kind of turned around because right. you never really know what's going to happen. And to be up in nature, that's a wonderful place for kids, really. Because I don't even know if the cities is the right place to raise kids. But nature, it has a way of nurturing you. So her ideal is fantastic.
Where did you grow up, Taliba?
Oh, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, of course.
So you grew up in the city.
Yeah, I grew up in the city, but I like nature. Nature has a way of healing people's spirit, because in the cities,
I agree.
There's so much shooting. There's so many sirens. There's so much. But when you go out in nature, that's why people like to fish so much, because when you go into nature, you throw your hook in the water. You just kind of sit back and just enjoy the sun, the birds, and it's just beautiful. I'm ready to go there now.
I didn't tell.
I am too.
When the show ends, let's all go. Right, you convinced me.
But remember now, you're going back to Mother Earth. You're going back to nature, so that's a great place.
Yeah. Thank you, Deborah, so much for the call. Bob in Sparta is next. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
Say, what we got here is rearranging the deck chairs on a cruise ship that's going down. I think the whole problem that you're talking about originates in the education system. And I find that there's three groups of people that are really coming up short on this. And one is the politicians, because they're afraid of the sacred cow of the teachers' union. I think that the teachers' union likes to call themselves professionals. But until the teachers get together and form committees to remove bad teachers.
What does this have to do with violent crime, Bob?
I think that, well, here's it. Is you've got a system there that has graduated about half of the students year after year after year after year, and there's only so many jobs for people that don't have a high school education. I think that this is a real opportunity for local control to really step in and straighten things out.
All right. I don't know where to go with that other than to pick the element that kids need to graduate from high school, certainly, and education is important, and I'm sure it's probably something you stress in your Safe and Sound program. Mm-hmm.
Of course. And there is in Milwaukee a large initiative that is operating under the leadership of the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. They created an entity or a process called Milwaukee Succeeds, and they're looking at the fact that, yes, we do have a large number of young people who not only are not succeeding in school, they're not graduating from high school, they're not going on and getting the jobs that they need to support families. So this is a multi-year probably a very long-term, complicated
right.
process to address this. And Safe and Sound is part of it. Our youth-serving entities are very important to this, and we are looking at how we can make our after-school programs as successful as possible, how we can deliver the best outcomes and ensure that young people do move ahead in life and are succeeding in school and are prepared to be the leaders that this community needs.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Randy next. Hi, Randy.
Good afternoon. I used to live on the north side of Milwaukee in the early 80s, and the violence really hasn't changed at all. To the point where we have young gang members that are executing, they executed a white woman right in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant so that they could be initiated into the gang. And the adults in the community just aren't... They're not making sure that their children are home. They're allowing them to run until all hours of the night. And everybody can blame the economy and the lack of jobs if they want. But our moral guidance that we receive from our parents is certainly paramount in what's going on.
Barbara.
Give me the tough one here, huh, Kathleen? Yes.
They've all been somewhat tough.
They've all
the
been
whole thing
somewhat
is tough.
It's a very complicated issue. We do need a multifaceted approach to this issue. There's no simple answers to it, and we do need families and schools and churches and everyone engaged in a process to make change. Now, crime has, at least up until fairly recently, gone down significantly mm-hmm. in Milwaukee as it has in other urban areas. We've seen an upsurge in the last 2 weeks, and a lot of us are focused on how to address that. We do need more opportunities for young people. I mentioned earlier that we have 19 after-school programs for young people. We used to have 48. Some of that change is based on funding. We need contributions. If I can make a plug, we need people
right
in
ahead.
This community to make donations to Safe and Sound and to other wonderful organizations in this community that are either taking actions in neighborhoods to build neighborhood engagement or who are working with young people to move them forward in a positive way in their lives. But we need to do more as individuals and as organizations in this city to attract young people into programs, to keep them busy, to help them develop as the change makers that they can be. We have seen young people who have been approached by gangs, who have begun to get involved in gangs, and through the after-school programs that we've run, been able to get those young people to change and transform their lives mm-hmm. and become very productive citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So it does fall on all of us to help make a change, and we do need help in this area. So any ideas and contributions that people want to make, they're very welcome. It is a complicated, complicated issue that is not amenable to being solved by one approach or another.
And it's a good place for us to end. John on Facebook writes, in addition to what you just said, Barbara, people can change. We know that with improved research on brain activity, people with past trauma and current problems can overcome that. People can change. People can transform their lives. And I'm sure that that's something that's front and center and that you've seen it. You've seen it, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've seen people, especially some young people, get involved in the community. They come to meetings because they say that they're tired of the negative activity that's going on in the community, too.
Right.
Young people are tired, too. Because all the shooting that you see, you have young people that they're like, we don't understand it either. We're tired of it too. You know, we want a peaceful neighborhood. So the community is changing. People are getting tired and people are standing up.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Safe and Sound is the program. You can find it online, I'm sure, as well. And thank you for all of your good work.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Our thanks to Barbara Notestein, who is Executive Director of Safe and Sound, and Taliba Mateen Hooper, Community Partner Organizer with Safe and Sound. They've been doing remarkable work in 21 communities in Central City, Milwaukee, since 1998, working to reduce crime to make neighborhoods safer. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for her help today. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock we're going to be talking about the importance of arts in schools, and we'll also be looking at voter ID.